As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right. This is Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. I'm so excited to be talking to you about the Toronto Blue Jays, who are in the playoffs. Straight up. That's what this is. Caitlin McGrath, the co-host of Spin Rate, she covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic. Just back here from the beautiful downtown Minnesota herself. Caitlin, how are you? Welcome.
Yes, welcome back. Fresh off a plane. Well, not quite fresh. I've been here since like this afternoon, but fairly fresh off the plane from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Not the downtown Minnesota, as I understood it. Home's Target. The reason I shook up the banter, shook up the prattle, the patter a little bit, because I was going to say is that you and I are here to talk about the playoffs, because that's what this series against the Yankees is. This is a playoff series. Mm-hmm. If you cover hockey and you can talk about some goofy first round series that means nothing, that's 2 months out from when they actually award the Stanley Cup, this is the playoffs. The Blue Jays come in two games behind the Yankees, who somehow improbably lead the wild card race in the American League after a wild series, weekend series in Boston. The Yankees are there, one game behind them. Boston Red Sox, one game behind them. Toronto Blue Jays. I may have given short shrift to the Seattle Mariners. It's because I deny their very existence at this point. They don't count. They're not not real. It didn't happen. Even though they have, they're one game behind the Blue Jays. So whatever. But they do play here tonight on Monday. But yes, this is Spin Rate, where we talk about the Blue Jays. We've got lots to talk about. Before we talk about any more, I'll of course put in the plug to say that you need to subscribe to The Athletic. If you want to read everything that Caitlin wrote there in beautiful downtown St. Paul, Minneapolis, you got to go to theathletic.com/spinrate and sign up. They'll give you a tidy discount. You will let them know that we sent you, and they will be allowed to continue creating this Spin Rate baseball podcast about the Toronto Blue Jays. And if you do like that we do create this show, thank you. If you do listen, if this is your first time, glad you're back. Glad you're here. Glad you are fired up about Blue Jays baseball here in late September 2021. Maybe you want to go over and hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. If it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever. Subscribe. If you like what you hear, give us a rating. Give us a review. Do all those things that keep us in the good graces of the algorithm so that we can continue cranking out Blue Jays talk, because there's a lot to talk about. Before we look ahead to the Blue Jays week upcoming, the biggest week in the last 5 years of this franchise, if nothing else, let's talk about the weekend that was there in Minnesota against the hapless Twins, who maybe, I think that might be a bit of a tough sell on the Twins, who hapless. I mean, this was a team that was favored to go to the playoffs. Obviously, things haven't gone that way. Made some big trades, including trading off their best pitcher, Jose Berríos, who now plays for your Toronto Blue Jays. But the Twins can do some things. They hit a lot of home runs. Their bullpen, much was made about their improved bullpen over the weekend. But the Blue Jays managed to take 2 of 4. So the question I have for you, Caitlin, is taking two games, splitting a four-game series on the road in September against the team that was favored to be in the playoffs, is that a disappointment?
I think going into it, it would feel like a disappointment because I think you thought the Blue Jays had the potential to come away with that series with a win. But then understanding that they lost the two first games of that series, I think the fact that they managed a split was very good. And you come away from that feeling satisfied, I think, just knowing sort of how bad the first two games went. You know, with a lot going on, you lose Lourdes Gurriel Jr. with this freak injury. I mean, it was at least positive news that it, you know, nothing structurally was wrong. It was just basically sort of a flesh wound with the stitches. And so they're hopeful that he'll be back relatively soon. But yeah, like the first two games, you know, didn't go well. Barrios pitched pretty well. He just had like one shaky inning. But you saw that the Blue Jays offense, the way that they can sometimes just go completely cold. And of course, those first two games, there were still a lot of questions with George Springer. You know, in fact, after that, I think Friday game, it was kind of questioning, like, should you move him down in the lineup? Like, should he still be hitting first overall just because, you know, you have Marcus Semien really going and he looked really good in the leadoff spot at different parts of this season and he's hitting the ball so well right now. You know, do you move George down? But obviously the next day, George Springer came back, kind of answered that question himself. He hit two home runs in the final two games and helped the Blue Jays win those two final games. Obviously, Robbie Ray pitched really well, as did Alek Manoah, battled again in a really good start. So, it was kind of like, to me, those four games kind of showed like the Blue Jays somewhat at their best, maybe not their absolute best because, you know, you lost Gurriel and then Vladdy and Bo struggled a little bit. Mm-hmm. More so Vlad. Bo kind of came around towards the end of it, but Bo was struggling a little bit in those early games. So both of them were not sort of at their best. But then you saw Marcus Semien hitting the ball well and George finally coming around. And so Teoscar was hitting the ball really well. And so other guys, Danny Jansen's obviously playing really well right now as well. So you saw the Blue Jays, you know, at what they can be at their very good and not even absolute best. And they can still win games really easily with their starters pitching well. But then you saw when they can be at their kind of most vulnerable, when they just, the offense can't do anything and they're all swinging and missing and they're just not generating anything. And then you're working with such small margins of error that if your starting pitcher has one bad inning, and you're just not able to make up for it. So, I think when you look at that series, you're really going to hope the Blue Jays of the Saturday and Sunday show up for this series this week, because that's really when they are the most dangerous, right? Like, that's obvious. Like, teams are always at their most dangerous when they're all firing on all cylinders. But you can just see how the switch can flip so easily with the Blue Jays a little bit, right? Like, they can kind of look lifeless for one game. And if it's one game in June, it's one game in June. But really, they can't afford to have any slip-ups here in the final six games. Like, whatever was going on with them in Thursday, Friday, maybe you say Thursday's game was because they were all kind of shaking a little bit at the Gurriel thing, and then Friday they're not quite snapping out of it or whatever it may be. But they can't really afford to do that in these final six games.
I think that in any other time of the year, you go on the road, you face a team, better or worse, you can't expect to do more than split. You know, ordinarily you split a four-game series on the road, you're like, that's good. Expecting a team to win 3 out of 4 games is a lot at any time, because that means that's a 75, you know, that's just not realistic to expect that. But the circumstances demand it. So when the Blue Jays go in and face what is an underperforming, but not the worst team, they have a bad record, but like, you can see what the Twins are capable of when they are hitting home runs, when Josh Donaldson and everybody else and Jorge Polanco or George Polanco is having an amazing season. They got a lot of weapons. So if you go in and split with them, or most of the time you're like, fine, take our two wins, we'll go home. You can't afford to do that. And the hows and whys are part of it, but it's really just because of where they are in this race. You look at the teams around them, The Yankees in their last 10 are 7-3. The Red Sox in their last 10 are 7-3. Even the Rays in their last 10 are 7-3. Right? The Blue Jays are 5-5. The Mariners are 8-2 in their last 10 games. You go to the last 20. Rays are 11-9. Yankees are 11-9. Red Sox are 11-9. Blue Jays are 13-7. So the Blue Jays picked up a couple games over the last 20, but then they give it right. It's sort of given back in the next 10. There's no break. There's no rest. You can't afford to just be happy with an okay result. So all the things that have happened throughout the season that put the Blue Jays into this position, their inability to get some good bounces, their inability to do the things to their roster that needed to be done, you know, when they needed to be done, which is, again, it's hard to throw blame, too much blame. Like they did things, right? They made moves. They weren't about to start making trades in May to address the bullpen. You know, it did correct itself. Since the All-Star break, the Blue Jays have one of the best pitching staffs in all of baseball. But the fact of the matter is they need to win every game they can win. And there's so much talk about controlling your own destiny. And right now the Blue Jays don't really, I mean, they do, but they don't, right? These three games against the Yankees coming up are so big. And it's unfortunate for the Blue Jays that the Red Sox laid a series of eggs over the weekend, because that was my thing all along, was I wanted the Red Sox to win that series. So that's just the Blue Jays and the Yankees, that extra bit of that as close as can be, so that these head-to-head games have the most impact. But now you have to try to beat the Yankees while also leapfrogging the Red Sox and trying to hold off the Mariners behind. And all these other factors start coming into your equation and all the calculus. And it's like, well, if the Red Sox, they got to lose two, or if they lose three against these two teams, like it's a mess. It's a delightful mess. And it's just that inability or all these things, 150 games that preceded it, that brought the Blue Jays to where they are now. They are not 100% in control of their own destiny. They're close, but it would be a lot better if they did. And, you know, again, you watch, I don't know if you watch, well, we'll get to that, like the stupid Red Sox Yankees game on Sunday night. But so you touched on like what went right and what went wrong in Minnesota. Definitely a bunch of really encouraging performances. Teoscar Hernandez, you mentioned him, just having just an incredible season. What a year. And, you know, I talked to Kevin Goldstein on the show in midweek, and he said, you know, again, who watched him closely in Houston and got to know him a little bit, he said the same thing that anyone with a bit of honesty would say. Nobody even expected this from Teoscar Hernandez. I'm sure if you sat him down and said, Teoscar, did you think that you were going to hit 300 with 30 home runs and 110 RBIs in the big leagues? He would probably say, well, yeah, I thought that, but like maybe not. But like, because this is crazy. It's crazy what a kind of a year he's having, and the timing of him having and playing so well, and like hitting that crazy high home run. It's just like what a year for Teoscar Hernandez. It's somewhat flown under the radar.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think, yeah, if you had said Teoscar's going to hit 30 home runs in a season, people would say, yeah, I can see that happening. But then when you add in, and the RBIs, and the over 300 average, and, you know, yeah, he still strikes out a lot, doesn't walk a ton, but he makes up for it because he makes a lot of contact. And it's not just swinging for the fences anymore, right? Like, he makes hard contact. He can run. He can really hit some line drives that end up being home runs. But he makes just a lot of solid contact. So he's got the average. And there are so many under the radar. Well, maybe not so many, but there are quite a few under the radar stories on the Blue Jays. Like, you talk about even a guy like Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Sure, he had a bit of an up and a down start to his season, but basically, like, since the All-Star break, he's been one of their best hitters, and especially in the last month. And like, you talk about Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and there's a lot of teams where like he would be the guy. Like, he would be the guy that everyone was talking about, and he's like fourth or fifth on the list of guys we're talking about in the Blue Jays lineup. You talk about Marcus Semien, 43 home runs. 43 home runs for a second baseman. I mean, that was fun to watch. There's been, you know, I'm sure I will reflect on whenever this Blue Jays season ends, whether it's over the weekend or whether it's beyond that, but just reflecting on how many cool things I've seen this year and like getting to see, you know, what Vlad's been able to do, especially these last 2 months, and especially because I missed so much of watching them, that I sort of appreciate how many cool moments they've managed to pack in these last 2 months. You know, all these fun comeback games, that game in that Saturday in Baltimore. I'm never going to forget that day because that was so crazy how many runs they scored, and seeing Simeon hit these home runs over and over and over again to left field. I feel like I've had such a good up close view of like basically every single home run he's hit at the Rogers Center, because he always hits it into the left field, always goes into like the seats or the bullpen, and I sit right there. So I feel like I always kind of know when Marcus gets a home run, because I'm like, oh, that's going to land there. That's incredible. Obviously, George Springer didn't have the season he wants, but when he's on, he's, you know, one of the most dangerous leadoff hitters. He really, he's really fun to watch as well. And so, yeah, like, I mean, there's so many guys, that we could probably do a whole episode on just like how many incredible individual and performances there's been on the hitting side, the pitching side. I mean, Robbie Ray's probably gonna cement himself as Cy Young Award this week, potentially, if he outpitches Cole. Obviously, they're not head-to-head, but they'll pitch one day after another. And, you know, there's a lot of great stories on the pitching staff. Tim Mazza, we've talked about a little bit. Jordan Romano, we talked about last episode. That core four of relievers, like you said, Adam Simber and Trevor Richards, has greatly improved the bullpen or the pitching staff as a whole, to the point that they're one of the better ones. And so, you know, getting to this point is that it will be unfortunate if circumstances are such that, you know, the Blue Jays did have this sort of like perfect storm of all these great individual performances. But, you know, unfortunately, for a chunk of time there in the middle, they just weren't coalescing to a lot of wins, you know, like the pitching staff, or the bullpen, especially like not being able to hold down those few wins in May and June. It's, you know, I don't like to play the game of like, well, if this had happened, they would have been in the playoffs, and then this would happen, because there's so many different, like, there's so many wins that they got that maybe they shouldn't have gotten those wins, right? Like, the Blue Jays have come back sort of miraculously a number of times. Like, should they have won the game against the A's where they were down 8-2 in the eighth? Probably not. Like, so, you know, these things kind of even out a little bit, that I don't necessarily like to point to specific losses and say, well, if this loss didn't happen or if this loss didn't happen, because you never really know, right? That's baseball. Like, that's how it works. That's how one team wins, and that's how one team loses. A team makes a mistake and another team benefits. That's how it all works. But I will say, though, like, the sort of storyline, or one of the storylines coming out of the season, will be, in general, missed opportunities for these Blue Jays. I think that will be like a defining storyline, you know, whether they make the playoffs, whether they don't make the playoffs, because, you know, this is a team that probably could have, if things were how they were in September for basically the entire season, this is a team that would have been contending, if not running away with the division, I think.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you look at Baseball Reference, they track their Pythagorean record, which is the record that you would assign to a team given their run score and run allowed as it's shaken out so far. By run differential, the Blue Jays should have 95 wins, right, while the Yankees should have 83. So the Blue Jays are one of the unluckiest teams in baseball. The Yankees are one of the luckiest.
And the Rays have, what do the Rays actually have, like 97 wins now?
Yes, the Rays right now have 97. Okay. So right now the Rays have 97 and the Yankees have 89. And the Blue Jays have 87. And the Red Sox have 88. But like that bit of luck. And then, you know, again, you look at the Red Sox, and the Red Sox and Yankees both have really, really strong one records in one run games. So Blue Jays are 500. The Red Sox have a losing record against good teams because they're frauds. But it doesn't matter because here they are. They have a playoff position, a better grip on the playoff position than the Blue Jays do. And you could always, the issue, I guess, is that the number of games, the number of missed opportunities for the Blue Jays, the list is long. And there are a million different games you could point to and be like, what if that didn't happen? What if that didn't happen? The one that Marcus Semien threw away, like there are 100, but really it's just a matter of, none of that stuff will matter if the Blue Jays can figure some things out, right? If the Blue Jays can kind of get through this and somehow come out on top, and if there's a tiebreaker or any of that stuff, if the Blue Jays can win a couple games when the season has technically ended, then all is forgiven. And then you're left with a team that is scary to play against, truth be told, because they have a lot of good players and they have some really good pitching. Now let's talk really quick. I don't know if you were, I guess you weren't traveling, that crazy Red Sox Yankees game on Sunday night, which could have gone in a million different directions. Adam Ottavino, embedded Yankee for life, born and bred New Yorker, serving up cookies for Aaron Judge to like hit through the fence, and then Giancarlo Stanton to hit out of the stadium. Joey Gallo making a crazy error, terrible call. Jerry West made an awful, awful call. Darren Judge struck out. Somehow that didn't happen. like just a wild, wild game that has now set up this crazy series with the Yankees. Now, maybe a question is, or maybe if you're a Blue Jays fan, your fingers are crossed that like, maybe there's a bit of a letdown after that crazy series, after sweeping the Red Sox and pulling ahead. If you're the Blue Jays, maybe looking for an angle, maybe the Yankees facing a bit of a letdown. They have this crazy game and they've got to go through the border, and which, you know, everybody knows is no fun. So maybe that, maybe advantage Blue Jays, question mark?
Yeah. Okay. A few things. The Yankees and Boston series was really interesting because it looked like a few of those games, at least the last two, Boston like had the momentum and then they just really were not able to hold on to leads. I know their bullpen was a strength in the first half and it has not been a strength in the second half. And they lost their best reliever, the Rule 5 guy, Garrett Whitlock, I think his name is. He's on the injured list. And so, and you know, I think they were managing their bullpen a little bit. Like Garrett Richards has gone to the bullpen and he was pitching well, but then he didn't pitch well yesterday, or on Sunday, should say. And yeah, the bullpen just fell apart. Someone tweeted a quote, I think, afterwards. I think it was DJ LeMahieu, and one of the Yankees writers tweeted it. And it was something like, this isn't verbatim, but it was something like, the story of our season has been getting punched in the face and coming back. And I thought to myself, that's kind of in the story of the Blue Jays, the Yankees, and the Red Sox seasons. Like, they've all had these periods where they've just looked awful, or they've just been like, you know, lost games they should have won, you know, have not been able to hit, their pitching has fallen apart, or whatever it may be. And you've kind of seen them all at different points of the season. You looked at the team and said, okay, they're done. Like, this, they're not coming back from this. Like the Blue Jays, you know, in August when they played that awful road series, the Boston having the COVID outbreak and all that kind of stuff, it looked like they were kind of on the brink of disaster. The Yankees had been, like a week ago, they lost to Cleveland. It looked like they were throwing in the towel. And then they've come out and won six straight to head into this Blue Jays series. So I honestly, I'm saying this from the heart, I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no clue what these teams have left up their sleeves. I could very conceivably see a series where the Blue Jays completely dominate the Yankees over three games at home. I was in New York when the Blue Jays beat them in four, and it was not even close. There was one game that kind of the scoreline looked somewhat close, but that was only because Nate Pearson gave up two home runs in the ninth inning, made it 6-4, should have been 6-2.
And that was that, and then
that the game the before
that,
game.
The game before that was the 6-3 game that Brett Gardner like ran into and hit a home run.
Yes.
Like a three-run home run.
Yes, exactly.
You are absolutely right. And like I thought that same thing too, and I'm sure I'm not alone watching that Sunday night game in particular. And it was like, these two teams are awful.
Yes.
And
like, look, the Blue Jays have looked awful at times too, like against the Twins that Friday, Thursday, Friday, like they didn't look like a team that was a world beater. Like, so every team is capable of looking bad for certain. If, you know, I can just be the more objective person here. But no, I totally agree with you. Like I watched the Yankees and the Red Sox game. To be honest, I watched part of it on mute because I was still doing some work. So I was like flipping back between mute and, you know, I don't need to listen to, you know, broadcast.
How dare you? Don't speak ill of Al. Summer of Al.
Still anyway, gone. And you know, but I had the same thought. I was like, how are these teams in it? You know, like they just looked so awful. And then the Yankees, what the success has been for them in this last little bit and why they've been so uneven is that they usually win when they run into some home runs, when they run into some hard hits. And then sometimes they can just look so completely inconsistent. I mean, I guess that's kind of the Blue Jays, but I think the Blue Jays have they have a much deeper lineup. And more of the Blue Jays lineup can hit home runs. And, you know, 1 through 9, the Blue Jays basically have hitters that can, maybe not 1 through 9 every single lineup, but like they're capable. But yeah, like I mean, and the other thing I should add is that like I've seen a lot of people, and you kind of express this, that like, yes, the Blue Jays' fate isn't entirely in their hands because they do sort of have to hope that Boston continues to trip up a little bit just to give them a little bit more room. And I've seen a lot of people say, well, Boston has an easy schedule and they have the Orioles and they have Nationals. But also like you talk about a letdown from the Yankees coming down, but like, you know, Boston did not look good in those. Like, they don't look like they have any guys that are coming out of the bullpen. And yeah, I understand they're playing the Orioles, but the Orioles, they can hit, like, and you know, it's not inconceivable that Boston, like, I don't look at this Boston team and say they're going to win the next 6 straight. I mean, they could because they just went on a run. But
the thing about this is that what you just said about the Red Sox has been true for 2 months.
Yes.
For 2 months, the Red Sox have looked like they're about to completely collapse. For 2 months, the Red Sox, suddenly you're like, well, yeah, no, Hunter Renfroe is a bad player, not a good player. And for 2 months, you've been like, you know, well, since in the second half, Bobby Dalbec's been one of the best hitters in baseball. Like, no, he's not. And you know, Devers is up and down. Bogaerts is up and down. Christian Vasquez is not having a great year, right? They've tried a million different things in the, you know, like Hernandez playing in the outfield. They get Sale back, but it's like, there's just something about this Red Sox team that feels terrible, but they've played 154 games like this and they've won more than the Blue Jays. Even though the Blue Jays are, I'm using air quotes, better. Blue Jays are better at scoring runs, they're better at preventing runs, they have better players in more positions. It doesn't matter. If this is it, if this is the time where the Red Sox are like, okay, we've had enough, you know, our repeated, we can't just hold this house of cards up any longer, great. But I refuse to believe that it's going to happen now because it's not happened. And it's been 50 games of them looking like it's about to happen. 50 games of like COVID outbreaks because they refuse to get vaccinated, for, you know, to a man. And now it's like one guy's on the COVID list, another guy's on the COVID list. Eduardo Rodriguez is having a terrible year because he had COVID last year. Like there's no way to, and he had myocarditis. Like they're a disaster, but they're still here. And I could see it. They could lose every game. If they went 0-6, if they got swept by the Orioles, who knew? But they won't.
Well, and also the same point goes for the Yankees, because remember the Yankees won 13 straight and then they went and lost. I don't know if they lost right after the 13th straight, but then they had ended up losing like seven in a row.
They were two and 11 or something like that.
Yeah, like when the Jays came and beat and swept them, they were in the midst of losing like seven in a row, like to the point where they basically gave up all the ground they'd gained over that 13-game winning streak. And like, yeah, then they kind of were scuffling a lot and they lost a series to Cleveland. They got like crazy. They got outscored by Cleveland scored 22 runs on them. And Cleveland is not a team that can score runs. They've been no hit like four times this season. Like they're the worst offensive team, one of the worst offensive teams. And, the Yankees looked, Cole was swearing on the mound because he looked over at the score or whatever happened. Like they looked like a mess. And then they, like I said, they won seven straight and, they could also show up and not be able to play again. Like, you know what I mean? Like all these teams have been so uneven and so inconsistent. I mean, the Blue Jays have been probably, based on the record, the slightly best team in September, but that was more so in the start of the month as opposed to this last week stretch. They've been obviously more inconsistent, losing to Tampa and then splitting with the Twins. But I don't really know what will happen. I think, though, I will say, I don't know if you'll agree or disagree, but I think the home field will be a factor. I do think the Blue Jays playing at home, this is their first home series against the Yankees. Like you said, this is the first time the Yankees have to come to Canada. And
they don't get to bring any Yankee fans with them, which is nice.
Yeah, unless there's Yankee fans here. But
there
will be mostly Toronto fans. And also the stadium's opening up to 30,000. And that's going to be a factor, I think. Like, I think that, it's not – a crowd can't make a baseball team play better. Mm-hmm. But it can energize a team. It can, you know, offer some maybe intimidation factor a little bit. You know, you just want to be – you know, if you watch games where in Fenway or even in Yankee Stadium, like, it can be a tough place to play. And so the Blue Jays have to hope that they create an environment where the Rogers Center is a tough place to play. And it has been. It has been playing really well this year. The Blue Jays have won a lot of games this year. And that's only been at like a really small capacity crowd of 15,000. So I think having the 30,000 there, I think that'll be a factor.
I don't know. The Yankees just won three straight at Fenway. They just swept the Red Sox on the road.
Yeah, but like that, but that's different because the Boston, you get a lot more Yankees fans there.
Fair enough.
I heard them say it was like 70-30 Boston Reds, or sorry, Boston Yankees fans there. And it's not quite a split, but I think it's going to be much more pro Toronto here. There's not going to be any loud Yankees fans here.
Just some clown wearing like a Lakers jersey and a Yankees hat. More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Let's talk a little bit about the pitching plan for the Blue Jays heading into this series. I was a little bit surprised to see they're just giving Hyunjin Ryu the start in the first game of the series. Is that maybe not a little bit surprising that he's just going to come bounding off the injured list, which I think... Maybe I'm crazy. Obviously, the injured list thing was bullshit. Like, it was just obviously garbage, and they just were like, go away for a while. Because he's just going to waltz right back out there in the biggest game of the year, and they're going to put him on the mound. Is that maybe a little bit fucking crazy?
It is funny because, his neck was sore. Like, let's leave it at that. But
we don't have to leave it at that. We don't have to believe them. They just said that it was bullshit. It's okay to acknowledge it. He had left arm shittiness. The traditional.
It was funny because the other day, we asked Charlie about Ryu. Like, you know, how's he feeling? Is he ready for the start? Kind of thing. And Charlie was like. And someone asked, like, what has he been working on while he's been on the IL to, you know, be ready? And Charlie was like, well, you know, he's resting the arm and resting the neck and, like, making sure you, like, make note of the neck part of it again. And obviously he's been working on his command and working with Pete and all that kind of stuff. So, the only other alternative would have been Steven Matz, right? The way it lined up?
Yeah, I guess so. That makes sense.
And I mean, Steven Matz has had his worst start of the year as well. I mean, maybe it was a blip and it was just kind of a weird game against the Twins. Like you said, they're not an awful team offensively, especially. But
and a bad matchup for Steven Matz probably too.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of matchups, though, like if you look at the numbers, Ryu actually has had two good starts against the Yankees.
His last good start was against the Yankees when he famously threw 80 pitches. I mean,
his ERA, I think in only two starts, though, his ERA against the Yankees, like under two. Like they haven't hit him very well. He's probably pitched. I mean, he hasn't pitched a ton against them because I think, again, it was only two starts or so. But they're one of the teams that have struggled to hit him. Like the last time we saw him, he was still in that uneven period. Like he was still kind of struggling. He didn't look himself. And he came back and had a really good start against the Yankees, and then he had two bad starts after that. But against the Yankees, he looked completely like himself. So I don't know if the Blue Jays kind of know something. They know something about the matchup. They like Ryu in that space. And I also wouldn't be shocked. I don't know if this is going to happen. I did ask about it, and I didn't get a necessarily like clear-cut answer. But I did ask if there's a scenario in which they use Ryu and they could bring in Matz after if something went real wrong, and they don't want to use Stripling necessarily, right? If they could kind of bring in Matz after that, I wonder if that's going to happen. I don't know. Or if they just want Matz to rest so that he's available for that potentially last game of the year that could be meaningful.
And they're all meaningful now. I'm just really interested to see. Like, I wonder if we could think about it. I mean, we don't have the numbers in front of us. Sorry, go ahead.
Like Ryu has four starts against the Yankees this year and has a 1.88 ERA over 24 innings, 21 strikeouts to six walks against them.
I mean, if his changeup is working, that's a really good weapon against like the Stantons and Judges and even LeMahieu's of the world, where if he can throw that down and away and let those guys who do have a lot of swing and miss in their game sort of flail at that. I know that was the big thing, right, that we've talked about a bunch, is that in that last start against the Yankees, when he went on September the 6th, they threw six innings, and he was dominant, but only threw the 80 pitches and then came out saying that he was feeling the ill effects. His arm was barking at him a little bit, but he threw a lot of cutters that game, which was a little bit different than what he's been doing this season. So if he's able to work that Hyunjin Ryu-ish combination of like changeups down and away to right-handers and then cutters kind of in and getting these guys really off balance and throwing either of those pitchers in any count, which is, you know, when he's right. Yeah, sure. He can be a great matchup for that team. But if he's not, if the changeup isn't working, it's probably going to be pretty evident early on that he's not able to get them off of his fastball, which is again part of the problem. He didn't have a lot of, a lot of folks I saw saying like, oh, he doesn't have any zip. Nothing's really, you know, coming off of the pitches that he's throwing and whatever else. So I don't know. I think it's a bit of a risk, but I think the biggest at the end of the day, what else are you going to do? You don't really have that many options, again, other than maybe Steven Matz. So,
they've lined it up such that like they've at least put themselves in the best position possible to win that series because you have Berríos and Ray. Mm-hmm. That's almost the best you can do. I mean, like you said, or like you were about to say before I interrupted you, they could have used Matz. But they, for what, you know, they like Ryu better.
Mm-hmm. Which I get. And if he's right, then that's great. Maybe this has all been like a slow, long con that they were sending him out there to get shelled. He's getting shelled by the Orioles and the Twins, in a way that is deceptive. But I guess one thing I think there was some debate about was what kind of a leash he might have if he might be on a bit of a shorter leash should he come out and look as he has had in those previous two starts before he went on the injured list with his phantom baloney injury to his neck. But it's no fun because even if you win two out of three, you only gain one game in the standings. So you're still one game behind with three to play. And yeah, the Yankees are going to play the Rays, who are home with their feet up. But that's why we log on every day. That's why we post. Why what we're here to do, to talk about baseball, to get excited for this exact opportunity. If you're going down to the Rogers Center, I'd love for you to get loud, have yourself a good time. Fortress Roger, I don't know, I'm just talking absolute nonsense. Caitlin, what do you have coming up for the people in the next little bit?
Well, I will be at the Yankee series. I have a story coming out later this week on one of the Blue Jays, let's just say, good players. His name rhymes with Slad Carrero Punier.
Punier. Interesting.
Yeah, so there's going to be a story coming out on Vladdy. And then we'll see what happens with this Yankee series. We'll see if I'm planning a trip later on this week, maybe to Boston, maybe to New York. We actually were imagining some doomsday scenarios where the Blue Jays had to play a tiebreaker game with the Mariners. We're like, how are we going to get to Seattle and back to Toronto? Would that be even possible?
Sounds like a good time. Did you change your mind on the MVP thing? The MVP debate's still going, which is crazy to me, but people are still talking about it.
MVP. I mean, my opinion has been that Shohei Ohtani's going to win it.
So Vlad hasn't changed your mind. He hasn't won you over seeing him in person. What if he goes bananas, goes crazy? It's like goes like Stanton did this weekend. Guess what? It doesn't matter.
No, I do think that Vlad is not going to win the MVP. Mm-hmm. I think he'll get some first place votes. I honestly think Marcus Semien could get some first place votes. Maybe not first place vote, but he'll certainly get some second place votes, I think. But I do think Robbie Ray is going to win the Cy Young.
I do too. And I think he deserves it.
Mm-hmm. I think that I don't even know that necessarily this start matters for him to win it. Maybe this will sort of just like put a stamp on it. And whatever happens, happens in terms of where these teams go. I think it would help if the Blue Jays get to the playoffs and maybe the Yankees don't or whatever. But I do think that Robbie Ray's pitched well enough. It's not an award that is, it's supposed to just be the best pitcher, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's just who is the best pitcher. Mm-hmm. But I think it's hard to ignore the Robbie Ray story. You know, like Garrett Cole's pitching really well, but Garrett Cole always pitches generally really well. Mm-hmm. And I think that the story around Robbie Ray of what he's, how he's transformed himself and coming off a career worst season where he was walking more guys than anybody in the league mm-hmm. and doing what he did this year. Like, I'm not a Cy Young voter. And obviously, like, you'd want to make your case for each guy. But I do find the sort of, like, overall story arc of Robbie Ray to be the most compelling one, too, as well as the fact that I think he's been the best pitcher as well,
yeah.
especially in the second half.
I think that the story is compelling, but I don't think you even need to get too much past the fact that he's pitched better. He's been the yeah. best pitcher in the American League. Ergo, he would win the Cy Young Award. Interesting. You mentioned the Guerrero and Simeon, something to maybe watch, something that if you're a Blue Jays fan, a trend you hope might turn around, which is that Guerrero and Simeon have been the two least quote unquote clutch players on the Blue Jays. If you look at their numbers, because they've performed at such a high level on balance this season, but when in higher leverage situations, both Guerrero and Simeon have underperformed. When the pressure is on, they've performed much worse. Than their standard numbers. If you look at like the win probability added, like there's a measure that's like leverage neutral, like so where you don't take into the account the leverage of the game. And obviously Vladimir Guerrero Jr. leads the way. But if you do account for leverage, he's lower. I mean, he still leads the Blue Jays, but he's not the league leader like he is overall offensively. If I was to tell you who's the league leader in WPA, when you account for leverage, it's Shohei Ohtani. Mm. He leads the league. He has performed obviously at a high level offensively, and has performed better than his normal level in the clutch. A lot of that has helped. I think recently he's been walked quite a bit. Shohei Ohtani, the Mariners wanted nothing to do with him. They walked him all weekend long. He drew like 13 walks in four games going into his start on Sunday, when of course he threw six innings, allowed one run, struck out 10. Same guy.
Who is the best clutch performer on the Blue Jays? Now I'm curious.
I'm pretty sure it's Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
Okay, that would make sense.
But
because he's been so good with runners in scoring position mm-hmm. and bases loaded this year.
It's an interesting number. It's an interesting measure, too, because the thing you have to take into account when you do that is the fact that he was, in fact, so bad for so long. Right. which will kind of hurt him from that regard. Actually, Bo Bichette leads the way in terms of clutch among like qualified hitters. He's actually mm-hmm. performed much better than Gurriel on balance through the whole season. And including, the earlier parts. So relative to, his clutch number, which is how much win probability he's added, including leverage versus in the leverage neutral context. Bichette's number one, Springer's number three, Corey Dickerson.
I was going to say, I bet you Springer's up there.
Yeah, Corey Dickerson's number two, but he's only not a huge number of at-bats. So yeah, you'd say among regulars, it's Bichette, Springer, Gurriel, and Danny Jansen. And then with Grichuk actually being the worst, Grichuk and Simeon tied for the performing even worse somehow. Randall Grichuk with the numbers on. I wrote about this in the newsletter actually last week, just because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. gets so many hits and gets on base so much. He is the most prolific like championship leverage contributor to the Blue Jays because he's just the best offensive player. But in terms of the plays that he's been involved in that have swung games by the greatest amount, his number three biggest swing was a double play he hit into earlier in August, I think. I don't remember the exact date, but again, just not had a lot of good fortune when the pressure was on. So if you were looking for a trend to reverse and you're a Blue Jays fan listening to this show, that would be the one. And if you're looking for another reason to suggest that a Shohei Ohtani should be the MVP, that would be another one.
Okay. Before we end.
Okay.
Let's do a fun little thing.
Okay.
So the next time we record together, mm-hmm. we will potentially know if the Blue Jays are going to the playoffs or not. Mm-hmm. We'll certainly know if the Blue Jays are playing like a 163 or something. Mm-hmm. So we'll know if their season is over or not mm-hmm. the next time we talk. Mm-hmm. So let's, you and I, predict right now what we think. Do you think the Blue Jays will make the playoffs?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think the Blue Jays are going to miss the playoffs.
I was going to say yes, they'll make the playoffs. And so now I'm glad I'm saying yes, because then we have two answers. Mm-hmm. It's more fun that way. I think they're going to do it. I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know if they're going to write their own history or if they're going to watch a team hand it over to them. Maybe a little combination of both. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going to make the playoffs. And I also think maybe they'll have to do it via 163, but we'll see.
If that happens, even if they make it into 163, I think they you should consider that making the playoffs, and you can consider that a win.
Okay, that's fair.
So
we'll meet back here next week.
We will meet back here next week.
Bye.
So as we mentioned off the top, Spin Rate is brought to you by Topps Project 70, which celebrates 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Project 70 has created this full set of unique, special commemorative cards designed by some of the greatest designers, jewelry makers, rappers, everybody around the world. This week, month, recently, Topps Project 70 released a Vlad Jr. and Senior commemorative card. It's available right now, available until the end of September, if you're listening to this. So just a couple days left. It is a really cool design, kind of like old school. Got a cool picture of Vlad Senior repping the Expos. Got the beard going. And we got Vlad Guerrero Jr. repping the Blue Jays All-Star vibe from when, of course, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was the MVP of the All-Star game, which feels like it happened 100 years ago, but it didn't. The season still going on. It's really interesting to compare their age 22 seasons. It's a good place to start. This is really the place where Vladimir Guerrero Sr.'s career started. He played just 90 games in his age 22 season, as opposed to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who is, of course, very, very healthy. And Vlad Sr. had a great season. He hit .302. He hit 11 home runs. He had a 116 weighted runs created plus. Age 22, easing in, but a bit of a different time, obviously. Bit of a different game back in the day. When, of course, Vlad was coming up on the green painted, wonderful ground awfulness of the Stade Olympique in 1997, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr. having an incredible age 22 season, one of the best we've ever seen, at the same time as Juan Soto and Fernando Tatis Jr. are also having incredible age 22 seasons. But I don't need to tell you too much more about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s age 22 season. Still got that outside shot and 50 home runs, sitting on 46 home runs. Bit of a quiet weekend, just had one hit and one walk this past weekend in Minnesota, but still having an amazing season. Still with that incredible walk rate, incredible, you know, strikeout rate, way ahead of the curve, hitting for so much power, hitting for an incredible average, leading the world in every offensive category you can imagine in terms of exit velocity, barrels, all that sort of just fancy nonsense, which we didn't have, of course, when Vlad Sr. was on the scene. But I think, you know, I think about this sometimes, and I'm not sure if I'm quite ready to unleash it, but I think that when we think about the approach, obviously the physical similarities between Vlad Sr. and Vlad Jr. are obvious. They are father and son. And Vlad Jr.'s swing has those similarities to Vlad Sr. But I think that the approach is of the MLB sons. Bo Bichette is the one who actually has a more similar approach, I think, to Vlad Jr. Vlad Sr. Of course, Vlad Sr. was famous for being able to hit everything. He'd swing at it over his eyes. He'd hit it off the bounce, not get hit it off the fence. Now, that's not who Bo Bichette is, but we've talked obviously a lot about Bo Bichette on this show recently, and he's a guy who can hit anything, and he has a plate coverage that is unrivaled in the big leagues today. And obviously, Vlad Jr. has incredible plate coverage too. But I think that's an interesting piece of that comparison, where we are in such a rush to compare as a junior and senior. But I think that in a lot of ways, Bo Bichette might be the preferable or the more apt comparison to Vlad Sr. Vlad Jr., nobody has plate coverage like he does. Nobody's able to go up there with a plan, to sit back, to be able to react to hard stuff, hit it out to right field, hit it hard to the right field corner. That's to the right field power alley, I should say. That is the sign, usually, when Vlad Jr. is going well, when you'll see him start to hit the ball hard or start to hit the ball the other way to right field a lot. And then have that ability to turn and hit the ball over the fence in left field like so few can. Coming up to this huge series with the Yankees and this series, the season ending series against the Orioles, it'll be interesting to see what kind of approach Vlad uses. You know, Gerrit Cole is going to be on the mound for the Yankees during the season. Vlad has had a great approach, had some really hard, hard hit balls off of him on opening day, has really shown that ability to sit back, kind of sit on the slider, I think, a little bit from Cole, sit back, react to the fastball when he sees it, shoot it the other way, hit it hard to right field. He does it. He makes it look easy. I can say it, and it sounds easy, but it's not easy at all. And I think that, you know, Vlad Sr., again, featured on this card that has the words father and son, father, son, written in huge letters. It gives it kind of this cool look. Vlad Sr. is an iconic baseball player. He is someone who has a mythology around him because he played in for Montreal. So people like me who grew up in Toronto, seeing him on TV a bit more often, maybe you make your way out to the Olympic Stadium and you get to see him. He's the stuff of legend, right? Again, all these things I've already mentioned, hitting the ball over his eyes, hitting the ball off the ground, throwing the ball from the third base line into the right field seats, and all these just kind of feats of strength, this weird mythology. He wasn't like Derek Jeter where the cameras are on him all the time. He's playing in relative obscurity. Then he goes to play for Anaheim, of course, which, as anybody who's been following Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani's career knows, is not exactly the most direct path to superstardom. So Vladimir Guerrero Sr., a Hall of Famer, an undisputed Hall of Famer, one of the all-time greats. But I think that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is on his way to cementing a very different kind of relationship with the Toronto Blue Jays fans and in the city of Toronto, because we haven't had a player who's got all these amazing combinations of skills that he has. Roy Halladay was the best pitcher in baseball. No one would debate that. There was a time in Halladay's career where he was absolutely the best. But Roy Halladay was a very different guy, very quiet, unassuming, wasn't out there for the limelight, but not a guy who craved that. It was a different time in the game, and he was very much like a very stoic figure. Here's Vlad Jr. having a blast, got the jacket, got the hair, out there goofing around, doing Adam Simber's dance. You watch these mic'd up features that come when the Blue Jays play the YouTube games. Vlad Jr. engages with every single guy that comes to first base. He knows everybody, knows their story, knows where they're from, knows something about them. And the other players really seem to respond to it. The players on the other team, that amazing quote from Geraldo Parra during that game when the Blue Jays played against the Nationals, and he said it in Spanish to one of his teammates that he's a great player, but he's an even better person. I really think that there's a great potential for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to become a true face of this franchise now and into the future. If you're a Blue Jays fan, I don't know if you're ready to sign those statue contracts like they talk about with Fernando Tatis Jr. He's probably going to play his whole career in San Diego. There's a chance that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. could be that guy for your Toronto Blue Jays. And I think that if you're in the interest of, if you're into collectibles, maybe this is a good place to start, as there should be a whole bunch of Vlad Jr. things signifying his incredible career that's just getting started with your Toronto Blue Jays. That's it for this edition of Spin Rate. Got the shilling out of the way. Got to do our work. Got to pay the bills. I hope you enjoy this amazing series coming up with the Yankees. I hope it's amazing. This is what it's all about. This is when we're always belly aching about meaningful baseball in September. This is why. This is what it's all about. Enjoy this amazing series with the Yankees. Fingers crossed. Hope it goes your way. If you're going down to the ballpark, have an amazing time. Get loud. Have some fun. Wear your mask if you're not having a drink. Like, let's still do the right thing whenever we can. And I also want to say real quick that September 30th is the day of truth and reconciliation in Canada. And I think a lot of us are going to be focused on baseball and life and all the other things. But I really hope that if you have the opportunity to take a moment and just think about what this day means, think about what all this stuff is, that these games are, where these games are being played and what the land that we're playing it on means, and just the sheer significance and the size and the looming, what's the word? That just how serious and how unbelievable that these things happened on under our noses and under our watch and with our tacit approval. So if you are fortunate and you don't have to work on Thursday, September the 30th, it would be great if you could take a moment in between worrying about baseball and doing all the regular stuff that we've all got to do to keep our lives going. Take a few minutes and think about what it means and think about what our country's history really looks like and the blood that's on so many of our hands and on the land that we're watching people play baseball on. So take a minute. I hope you do and hope you can and hope it means something to you and you can reverse the generations of ignorance, because people like I absolutely did not know so many of the things that happened. They didn't teach us and I didn't ask. So we have a real opportunity with our kids and with the next generations to make sure that they have a better understanding of what it means to be Canadian and what Canada really means and what Canada really looks like and what our history really is. So if you're able to take some time on Thursday to do that, that would be awesome. And then when you're done, go out and enjoy the game. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next time on Spin Man.